had that problem before. Hi, I'm Ken. I'm an alcoholic. It's always nice to stand behind one of these things and not have to enter a plea. I want to thank the committee and all the folks that got me here. There's so many phenomena going on with me right now because it's kind of warm, and I've been drinking water for like an hour and a half. I'm in the back of my mind, I'm hearing my mom, she's saying, you should have thought about that before you left the house. You know, like, so I may exit stage left kind of quick. It's nothing personal. It's just, and plus that my lips are dry. I don't know what this is. My lips feel like, you know, I won't go into that. But I'm really glad to be here. I want to thank Dan and Carla and all the folks on the committee who invited me to come. This has been a great week for me. This has been a great week for me. I've heard so many Roman Catholic speakers here that I thought maybe we'll just do the rosary. You know, like just do the rosary, say a few Latin words, and then bug out. You know, just go on home. You know, and I really enjoyed the two speakers we had on Sunday night, Kay and CJ. I thought they were terrific, and then you're right, exactly. And then Mary Ann Weaslin, her way into our hearts on Monday night, and that was good. And then Tuesday night we had Deja Vu Tim. Only in his case, in Gene's case, it's Boujade. It's not like I'm thinking it's happening. It's happening, you know. Like, this is great. And Larcine, I don't know where it is, but I think today was her birthday, or is her birthday? Is it your birthday? Happy birthday, Larcine. Yeah. God bless you, Butch. Larcine went to the Walter Winchell School of Broadcasting. You know. I appreciate the Alan. I had a wife just like Art Larcine. You know, like my wife was so normal that she didn't make any sense to me at all. You know, she would wake me up in the middle of the night and say, "Shh, there's somebody outside." I said, "That's where they belong, outside." You know? When they come inside, let me know. You know, we're ready to do battle here. You know, and probably just like Larcine, but maybe a tad bit slower. You know, she got into that math thing. You know, like, that's your second drink. I'd say, honey, don't worry about it. Just go ahead and finish your breakfast, and just go ahead and do it, and you know, we'll get on doing something else. You know, like we don't have to worry about a whole lot of this stuff. You know, now I don't know about you guys, but I'm a real alcoholic. You know, the book talks about real alcoholic, and that's what I am. I'm a real alcoholic. You know, I drank stuff that not only, you know, hit the spot, it removed it. You know, like that, you know, that kind of stuff, you know? You know? People used to say philosophically, is the glass half full or is it half empty? I always thought the glass was too small. And that was my, you know, that's where I was coming from, you know? You know? That's just the way it was. I just did that kind of stuff. And I had, you know, I didn't realize until I was sober a while, I had some dependency issues. I didn't even know there was such a thing when I first got sober, but I had some dependency issues when I was drinking. I used to say to people, is my fly open? And they'd say no, and I'd say, well, it should be. I'm peeing. You know, like, and that's just the way I operated, you know? My mom used to say, drunk or sober, you are no day at the beach. You know, like, And what you guys are doing now is one of the primary reasons that I love to do this thing. I love to hear people laugh. You know, I just love to hear people laugh. Because I know a couple of things about laughter that most people don't know. First of all, you cannot laugh and think at the same time. You know, it's impossible. So every time you're laughing, you're getting a respite from your favorite topic, which is you, you know? The song in AA should be, I am always on my mind. I am always on my mind. I know that's just basically the way it is. The other thing, as Jim pointed out, it produces these endorphins, which is really good for your health. In fact, they rate it right up there with jogging and sex. Now, if you have a gal who likes to run, you guys are jumping way out there. You know? And you can get her to laugh, which at my age is undressing. You know, like the bottom line is that you can produce a lot of endorphins quickly, you know, and be very, very healthful. You know, about 2 months ago, I was up in Canada. I've been working up there part-time, and I rented a car, and I had one of these GPSs. You know, Hertz has this global positioning system now, and you get in it, and you punch it in, and you say where you want to go, and it takes you there, basically. And I got in this car, and it had snowed up there pretty heavy, and as we were going down the road towards the destination I had plugged in, I turned off. Because I saw a car wash that I could drive through. So I drove through this car wash, came out the other side, and you couldn't go left back onto the main road. You had to kind of get out through the back, so I made a right and another right. And when I was making that second right, a voice came on and said, please follow directions. You know? And I thought, if I had this in my life a little bit earlier, I could have gotten through a lot of speed bumps, you know, like this was just the way it worked for me. You know, I was one of those guys, I needed a sponsor in kindergarten, you know. I needed someone there to stand behind me and kind of confirm what was going on. You know, I would have loved to have a sponsor in kindergarten, call him and tell him what was going on and have him say, hey, Ken, eat the cookies, take the nap, you know, like. That would have been exactly what I needed. And when I came to AA, I had a sponsor who, no matter what I said, he'd say, read the book, do the steps. I'd call him at night, you know, after a rough day, and he was always this loving, kind guy. And I'll tell you one thing, I really lucked out sponsor-wise. There it goes already. I got sober on July 5th of 1970. I met him at my first meeting. And he's still my sponsor today, 30 years later. You know? Now, that's really unusual in AA because people die, move, go away, do all kinds of things. And he was loving and caring right from the get-go. You know, I used to call him up and say, you know, my wife left me. He said, good for her, good for her. It's about time that gal caught a break, you know? You know, and I'd say, and I can't see my kids. He said, good, good, good. You know, this thing's starting to work for them already, you know? And then I'd say, and I'm on my way to jail. I was indicted. Good, that's where you belong because, you know, that's a... And then I'd read a whole litany of problems that were imaginary, and he'd say, hey, Ken, maybe you get lucky and die tonight. And he'd hang up, you know? And that was like a... That was this very warm, sensitive guy, you know? He came to my house when I finally got an apartment, which was about 6 months into sobriety, and it was in a crack house, you know? So, not that kind, but it was a deal where he came over and he bought me some coffee and he bought me a little burner to cook it on, and he came in and I had orange crates for furniture and I had like a little lamp and I had a Hummel on this box and he came in and he was a big guy and I said, you know, he said, make some coffee, and I said, okay, I'll make some coffee. And this little Hummel from Germany that my mom had given my wife and I when we got married, and when she left she took all the rest of the stuff, but that was my mom, so she left it with me. I said to him, I'll go make the coffee. I said, you know, sit down there, which meant he had to hold on to the orange crate because he had no chairs. He had to sit on the floor. And I said, but be careful of that Hummel. And he said, which Hummel is that? This is a Hummel? I said, yeah. So he picked it up and he threw it off the wall. And it shattered in about 100 pieces. And he said, now you don't have to worry about shit. You don't own anything, you know? somebody break in here now and see these orange crates, they'll leave you something, you know, like... And when I was 25 years sober, I got a knock at the door. It was United Parcel Post, and I had a box. And I opened that box, and there was this Hummel, scotch taped and super glued and together. Everything was out of place, and it said, "Good things come for those who wait." So that's the kind of guy I'm dealing with, you know? And I work with the nicest guys now, because I work with guys that, you know, we would not ordinarily mix. I am now sponsoring a guy from Iran. Well, excuse me, he's a Persian. And I had a guy come over to my house a couple of weeks ago, and he's having trouble with God. And for some reason, Sam was already there, and Sam was in the bedroom. It was sundown. He had to say his prayers. So this guy comes in, and the first words out of his mouth was, "You can be my sponsor, but I don't have any interest in this God thing. I don't understand it." And I said, "Well, come on in. Sit down." And just as he sat down, Sam was doing his prayer. So we hear, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa." He said, "What the hell is that?" I said, "It's Sam doing his third step." You know, he does believe, you know, he does believe. And the deal is, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you get to meet people who, you know, I love working with newcomers. You know, they have that kind of look in their eye. You know, the hamster's dead, but the wheel is still turning. They kind of have a blink where this eye closes when this eye opens. You know, it looks like they're trying to bring in some landing craft. And they're always making a statement that has absolutely no validity for anything, you know? And I love those guys. And I'm sponsoring a guy now who's a psychiatrist. And if you don't think that's a hoot, I mean, I'll tell you that I have a guy I sponsored never finished more than fourth grade. And he comes and tells me I can't work with him. Can't set up with him. Every week he asks me the same question. "Why do we make the coffee this way?" He said, I tell him because that's the way they train me. So I called the psychiatrist and said, "We got to get together. You're creating a lot of havoc over there." He said, "Ken," he said, "do you realize how many degrees I have? I went to Harvard. I went to Stanford." He said, "This guy, totally unscarred by education, telling me what to do." I said, "Did you ever notice Sparky? He has the key." You know? We trust him. He knows how to set up. You know? When you're here a while, we'll trust you with the key. But first you got to learn how to make that coffee. You know? And that's the way it is in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the Big Book, all the good meetings have one right there. No. But anyway, it's like the owner's manual. You know, whenever anything comes up, you just open it up and read it. And now this psychiatrist came over to my house and he brought the Big Book with him and he said, "Ken, this literature is a little vague." So I said, "Well, let's sit down and go over it." I said, "Let's start with step 11, because I think that's a great place to start for you. It says, when we retire at night." Now, when do you think that is? Like, maybe when you're getting ready to go to bed? "We constructively, not destructively, review the day." You think that's pretty vague? Okay, we'll give you that one. How about the second one? "Upon awakening." When do you think that is? You think like when the morning comes and you're kind of opening your eyes and you kind of look around the room for the first time, you say, "Hey, I think I'm upon awakening." You know? When do you think that is? You know? And then it says, "During the day, when agitated, when you face indecisions." Which part of this is vague to you? You know? And let's read this next part, because he's a thinker. I know nobody in Crestview gets caught up in this, but you'd be surprised how many alcoholics in California are thinkers. You know? I mean, if they're not tailgating a thought, they're lonely. You know, like, it's a, you know, just going by them like nothing. So I said, let's read this part here. It says, you know, we recognize humbly that we're no longer running the show. Humbly recognize, no longer running the show. And now let's read this next part. So during the day, many times, I'm talking many times, it says, "Thy will be done." Many times. And that's to prevent you from thinking. If you get up in the morning at 7 o'clock and you say to yourself, "I don't have the answer to what's in my mind right now," then why keep trying to come up with the answer? I mean, why go to bed at night and saying, "I still don't have that answer," and that's all I did all day long was think. I hang out with alcoholics. Now, these guys are in California, not Texas and Colorado, obviously. But the guys I work with and hang out with are real alcoholics, and you know, they're trying to escape from a reality they're not in, you know? Reality is like a drive-by, you know? It's just going by them, and what was that? That was a reality. Whew. Boy, I wouldn't want to hang out there. It looks bad, you know? And the bottom line is that basically this thing is all about living in the now and getting in touch with a power greater than yourself. You guys have a little deal up here. It says the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. If you look inside that word spiritual, there's a very key word that most people never see. The word is ritual. You have to do the ritual. Spirituality doesn't just come like that. It's like going to the gym and working out. You got to get after it. And the bottom line in Alcoholics Anonymous is everybody wants the end result, but nobody wants to go to the gym, you know? And the ritual here is you have to allow time every day to do those things like thy will be done, to get through this thing. It's all about the thinking. And I listen to people who are in pain, morning in, morning out, day in, day out, telling you the same tale of woe. You know, 1948, this is not 1948. Let me get your calendar, first of all. You know, this is 2000. We're a little past 48, you know? We've had the Korean conflict and the Vietnam War, you know? And people want to look for a logical world. This is not a logical world. Woodstock lasted longer than the Gulf War. This is not a logical world. If this were a logical world, men would ride side saddle, you know? Could you see the Duke riding off side saddle? See you later, pilgrim. And anytime you think alcoholics have a lock on reality, just open the big book, go to the end of the big book, get the traditions out, and read tradition 2 in the long form. In the long form, tradition 2 has 22 words. Go to the short form. It has 32 words. You know? One of us said, "Let me make that a little shorter." And made it 50% longer, you know? That's the kind of mind we have, you know? It goes through that book and it says, I mean, example after example. You take the third step. Third step is a very powerful step. You know, you kind of build up to it because you're going to turn your will and your life over to the care of something. You're not too sure about it. So you get with your sponsor and you probably get down on your knees and you work up to that thing and then you do the third step prayer. And you get up and you're kind of woozy because it's... Then you read the book. The next line says, "We thought well before taking this step." Well, why the hell didn't you tell me before I took it? You know? I'm already done with it. I'm ready to move on to the fourth step. You're telling me I should be scared of the third step, you know? But that's the kind of minds the guys who wrote this book. But they wrote a lot of good stuff, too. Don't get confused on this. They wrote a lot of good stuff. But this is about thinking. You know, it's kind of like the kid who was having trouble in school with math. Just couldn't seem to get this math. So the teacher said to him, "Why don't you stay after school and I'll help you. I'll tutor you a little bit." So the kid stayed after school and she said, "Okay, let me give you a problem." She said, "There are 12 birds sitting on a fence, and I shoot 7 of them. How many are left? Kid says, none. She said, well, I know that's kind of fast. Let me start over again. There are 12 sitting on a fence. I shoot 7 of them. How many are left? Kid says, none. She said, how are you getting that? He said, well, if you shot 7, the rest would fly away. And she says, well, you know, math-wise, you're wrong. But I really like the way you think, you know? So he said, you mind if I ask you a question? She said, no. He said, okay, there are 3 women coming down the street. And they all have ice cream cones. One's licking it, one's biting it, and one's chewing on it. Which one is married? She said, I guess the one sucking it. He said, no, it's the one with the wedding ring, but I really like the way you're thinking. And that's the deal here. If you're all caught up in this thinking thing, you're missing out on reality. You know, it's like, and the whole purpose of being here is to stay in the now. You know, I have conversations all the time, and that was like one of the great highlights for me this weekend. I had an opportunity to interact with a lot of people who were nice enough to take time out of their busy schedules and schedule lunch or coffee or whatever, and I got a chance to just be there and listen to a lot of folks share where they were at. And the nice part about doing that is what you find out is we're all pretty much on the same path. And you also find out there's more than one way to change a dollar, you know? And that everybody looks at this thing a little different. But the biggest problem in Alcoholics Anonymous with me that I notice over and over and over again is people just aren't in the now. They're in the future. They're in the past. And then you say to somebody, well, you're going to have to get in the now. And they look at you, kind of like that hamster, and they say, well, I can't live in the now. Well, where the hell do you think you're living? Can you think, experience, or do anything that's not in the now? And the answer for me is, I don't know how you can do that. The only thing is to be aware of it. And the one thing I noticed about being in the now is the more I began to live in the now, the fewer my problems were. In fact, I had no problems in the now. And then it hit me one day, that's because in the literature it tells me exactly why that's true. Because it says in the literature, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him. We can close. Go home. We're done. Now, and that's why when you're in the moment, there's really the only place that you can come in contact with God. And in that moment, there's absolutely nothing wrong with my life. The only time I feel pain and anguish is when I'm looking back down memory lane or projecting out to some future disaster. But right now, I'm okay, and I've been okay all the time. When I was sent out from the home office, I was okay. Along the way, somehow, I forgot who I was. And forgetting who I was, I made up a person. And that person is the person who I couldn't keep sober. And I listen to a lot at meetings. I'm a good observer of people. I've gotten real good at this. I'm a kid from the streets of Brooklyn. I know how to survive real, real well. You know, I lived in a neighborhood where they used to say, you know, how far is it to the subway? And we don't know. No one's ever made it, you know? You know, they used to find a guy shot in the trunk of a car and say, he deserved that. He shouldn't be sleeping there. You know, that's the kind of people they were. And so you get real good at observation. But I began to hear this in meetings. And what I began to hear was I heard a lot of people say this sentence in one form or another. I can no longer stand myself. I can no longer put up with myself. I can no longer do this with myself. And it began to hit me real clear. They're talking about 2 separate entities, I and myself. And the I in me, which is God-centered, is always okay. It's this other person that I've made up that has all these problems. And when that person gets done with, those problems go away. And fortunately, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous helps us do that because it gives us what? The steps. You know, the first three steps help us to clear up. The next 4 through 9 help us to clean up. And 10 through 12 help us to grow up. And the nice part about that is while you're doing it, you get to hang out with people who are really, really sick. And so, so funny, you know? At meetings sometime, if you came in from the outside, you would say, this is a rough crowd. Because somebody shares they lost their job, the dog died, the wife ran off with her girlfriend, and we're laughing our ass off. Is this a good shot or what, you know? And they don't realize we're not laughing at anybody's problems. We're laughing at their solution. What are you going to do? I'm getting a bigger dog. I'm going to go find me a heavyset woman, you know. Be no running around here, you know. And so the bottom line is that it's our solutions that are doing us in all the time. And that's why I keep coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I need to hear the steps over and over and over and over again. Because I don't care how long you've been around here, the strongest tendency is to forget the simplest things. And when you do that, you put yourself in a lot of jeopardy here. It's just that simple. And, you know, it's I watch people sometimes, it's like watching them changing deck chairs on the Titanic. You feel like yelling out, it's going down. Doesn't matter where you sit, baby's going down, you know. And they're doing all this stuff, you know, like in our area, you know, people go and get baptized and they get analyzed, you know, and they meditate and they vegetate and they heal the child within and they discover their pain and, you know, they have their cards read and their chakras and their auras, and if they got any money, they go to India and Tibet. That's the big one now, Tibet, you know, because somehow they just know intuitively that God is opposed to indoor plumbing, you know, and that you... you can't find God unless you first contract dysentery or hepatitis, you know? You know? And that's what you got to do. You got to get out there. You got to go find it, you know? And I said, whoa, whoa, Sparky, sit down. You know? Whoa, let's pace yourself. You got the whole day, you know? And you take out this big book that we have, this $6 book, and you say, let's read this together, because you seem to be a little hysterical. Deep down, inside every man, woman, and child, is the fundamental idea of God, the great reality. It's only, in the final analysis, it's only there that you can find it. And you must search diligently within yourself. This has nothing to do with going to Tibet. You know, if you need a trip, take it, you know, but don't blame it on God, you know? You know, poor God gets the hit for a lot of manure, you know, and the bottom line is that he's not responsible for that stuff. What he's responsible for is the now, and in the now, we're okay. And you get, after a while, to realize that this is a lot of fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and most of it is perception. You know, it's not about what's going on. It's about what we think is going on. You know, there's two little boys in the hospital that get surgery, and they're two five-year-olds. And the first five-year-old says to the second five-year-old, what are you in here for? And the kid says, appendix. He said, what are you in here for? He said, I'm going to get circumcised. And the other kid says, wow. He said, I had that when I was first born, and I didn't walk for a year. You know? So it's really about perception. It's, you know, it has, you know, it's not about, nobody's in reality, so it's all perception, you know? I look at guys sometimes, it's like a snail sitting on a turtle going, whee! And you say to yourself that if you're not, you know, you should be laughing at you, because if you're not laughing at you, you're missing out on the best joke. And besides that, the rest of us are, you know? You know? You are like a cartoon feature, you know, except in you, you know, Wile E. Coyote is real, you know. I have guys come over to my house. I have a lot of toys to help guys get sober and stay sober. I have a lot of pictures in my house to kind of help guys. I have a picture of a guy on a horse, and he's going off a cliff. His hat's flying back, and he's got hold of the reins yelling, "Whoa, whoa." The guy said, "What's that, Ken?" I said, "That's somebody trying to get sober by themselves." You know? They think they're in charge right up to the time they hear the... And then suddenly they say, "That wasn't very funny." And the bottom line is, it isn't very funny. And you watch these alcoholics, you know. And the nice thing about my sponsor and I is we have so much history that when he calls me on the phone, we start laughing at things that aren't very funny. You know, he went through a lot of financial stuff a few years ago, and I went through a lot of financial stuff, and it wasn't very funny. And he called me for my 30th anniversary, and he said, "You're my hero. You know why?" I said, "Why?" He says, "You turned out to be St. Francis." I said, "Is that right?" I thought he was giving me a big compliment. He said, "Yeah, remember, the only thing he wanted out of life was to be poor and homeless and hungry." He said, and he really worked at it, you know. You would just seem to come to with your best ideas, you know, and I laughed a little. But the nice part about it is, I can tell you this from the bottom of my heart, there is no power in this world outside of God. Absolutely none. And so no matter what happens to me, I trust life. I trust life because I have the experience of being sober and trusting life. I look around this room and I say to myself, if we were all to talk for a few minutes about our worst adventures and then say, "Okay, what did God do for you as a result of this?" I'm hanging out in Crested Butte. That's my reward or punishment. Yeah, I'm going to punish you because you live such a terrible life. You go to Crested Butte, see those beautiful mountains, hang out with nice people, eat great food. And there's more where that came from if you keep screwing up. You know? And the nice part about it is you get to realize all the time that everything is okay, and the only time it's not okay is when I'm thinking. You know? I'm at my best when I'm not thinking. You know, some of the best things in life that I left undone due to alcohol are probably turned out pretty good. It's the things I worked on. Those are the things you have to really watch, you know? And when I got here, I was a little confused on how this worked because my sponsor was so nice to me. My wife and kids were moved out of state and I couldn't see them. And after a while, I got so I could see them every other weekend, but in the beginning, I couldn't see them at all. And he'd invite me to come over his house and be with his family. And they were all in one place. You know, and he would sit me down to dinner, and then he'd take me to a meeting. He was doing so many nice things for me. And he did it without any thought of me, this bozo, doing anything for him. And so the first time he said to me, "I'm taking you on a 12-step call." Only they didn't say that in the city. They said, "I'm going to go put the hit on this guy." You know, it was that kind of a neighborhood. You put the hit on someone. So he said, "Let's go put the hit on this guy." So we went out to this guy's house. And there was no parking, you know, typical city street. He says, "Go in and get this guy." Now, I came in July, so this is maybe end of July, beginning of August. I'm still living pretty much out there where the buses don't run, you know? And so he sends me. Now, this is a guy who's never asked me to do anything. In like 4 or 5 weeks, he's done everything for me. So he says, "Go get this guy and knock at the door and bring him out. I'm going to drive around the block and come back." Well, as he tells the story, when he came back, I'm beating this guy with a garbage can lid. You know, I got this guy up against the fence. I'm just smashing him with that garbage can lid. And he whistles me back like a retriever. So I come back and we get in the car and we just take off. And we go about 4 blocks, and he says, "A couple of things I want to get straight with you." He said, don't ever tell anybody as of yet you've been on a 12-step call. He says, and until I tell you otherwise, don't be bragging about me being your sponsor. See, I didn't know it was a program of attraction. I thought he sent me to get this guy. My job was to get this guy. His wife came to the door and said, I don't think Al wants to go now. Like he had a choice. I says, well, let me speak to Al, and I'll give him a number he can call if he wants help in the future. And that's what I was thinking about at that time. That was my best thought. And I got a little pencil, and I'm writing down numbers, and Al comes to the door. You know what Al looks like in July? Being at home, had the shorts, you know, that real sexy T-shirt with moth holes all over it. And Al says, you better get your ass off that stoop. And I was like, De Niro, you talking to me? You talking to me? So I kind of snatched Al out from behind the screen, and that's when I introduced him to a garbage can last night. And I thought, Al, maybe you'll want to go next time after you call us, you know? And, and so the word went out in our home group, you know, if you're going on a 12-step call, keep Ken in the trunk, you know, like that. You know, keep him as a backup just in case it doesn't go good, you know. And that was my introduction to going to helping someone else, you know. And I figure, hey, he may want what I have, you know. And even if he didn't, I was going to share it, you know. And the nice part about the whole scenario was is that this guy and I developed this rapport that now when we call, there's no introduction. We just get right to our rough draft. He can give me his rough draft. I can give him my rough draft. There's never any evaluation of it. It's just about the fact that we're two alcoholics. He went, you know, you guys, I'm sure many of you, this is not your first convention. I was in Jekyll Island in March. And he came down from New York, and that was the very first convention he was ever at, 37 years sober. They just don't do this in New York. You know, you can't get people in Brooklyn to go to the Bronx. You know, like, next time you get a list of all the conventions, look at them and say, the Brooklyn Fall Festival. You know? The Bronx Winter Carnival. You know, like... lights go out, people stay home. You know, like, you're not going to get people running around the city. I'm going to a D&D convention. How it works. Yeah, I'll show you how it works. You know? So the bottom line is he comes to the convention, and his wife and his kids were there. I hadn't seen his kids in a while. Their kids were there. And we had all this history. His little girl, who was 12 years old, was now there with her teenage son, who had just gotten engaged to this gal. I mean, you develop a history in AA. You develop a relationship with people that you know. I don't know, sometimes we make up these myths that you can't have good relationships. I have nothing but good relationships. I have long-term relationships. My neighbor is a guy who was at the very first AA meeting I ever went to. He's 6 months ahead of me in sobriety. When I came into the program, his wife had just died. She was a diabetic and had gone into insulin shock, and she had just died. And so the reality was he had no one to hang out with, and I had no one to hang out with, so we hung out together, and we made a lot of meetings together. And the reality was is when he was getting ready to retire, he had been out visiting me over the years. He just decided that's where he wanted to live. Now he's my neighbor. We go out in the morning. We walk 5 miles at the lake. He's great for me because he talks the whole way. And then when we get done, he says, sure hope you weren't listening. And I say, why, Bill? He says, because I don't know what the hell I was talking about. You know, like, and that's the kind of guys you want to hang out with, you know? Guys that don't have a whole lot of vision, you know? You know? Guys that are just there. You call this guy at 4 a.m. saying, you know, I'd like you to be here. Boom, he's there. That's the way it is. It's not about why, how come, is this a special deal? It's the kind of people who are just there. And I've had those relationships over and over and over and over again. I had a son who died in 1993, and he died a very traumatic death. And as a result of his death and a lot of other deaths when I was there, I've come to the realization that all of life is life. And the stuff that I was getting concerned about sometimes were situations in life. They actually had nothing to do with life. They were just situations in life. And the bottom line was, I couldn't tell the difference. And when my son died, the last thing I remember him saying to me while he was still conscious before he died was, "You take care of yourself. And I'm good to go. I'm good with this. I'm good to go." And that has happened to me over and over and over again in life. I've been there as a result of a whole lot of things for people who are dying. Death is a very big part of my life. And what I notice is, whatever is that life, you know when it's gone. You just know when it's gone. You don't have to be a medical person to say this person's in coma and this person is dead. When they're dead, that life force is gone and you just know it. And the bottom line for that for me is, I don't have time to waste on a lot of nonsense. I just don't have time to waste on a lot of nonsense. I have my life very pragmatic, practical, and simple. And I do the things I do in the ritual there because I know the spiritual life is not a theory. I suffer from a spiritual malady. That's what the text tells me. When the spiritual malady is overcome, I straighten out mentally and physically. And how I maintain that is I have to have a daily reprieve based on my spiritual well-being. I don't know how anyone can tuck that aside and say they're going to get sober. I mean, it's like saying you want to be a lifeguard, but you don't want to go near the beach or in the water. You know, it's like, that's the deal. It has nothing else to do with anything else. And the nice part about it is if you just do that deal on an everyday basis, you get to see reality. And I have simple answers. The guy called me the other day and says, I'm incurring stress. What is that? I said, you're here and you want to be there. That's stress. This is not complicated stuff. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do this stuff. You just have to read the literature and make sure you practice it in all your affairs. And the rest of this stuff gets easier and easier. And the only people who seem to have trouble with it are people who are overeducated. They read stuff there that isn't there. They have imaginary arguments with themselves. I'm not one for changing any of AA. I wouldn't change one thing in AA, except I would add another tradition. And that tradition would be, whenever you share, it should be compulsory that you listen. We won't hold you responsible for the text, but we're going to try to hold you responsible for your own thoughts. You know, I go to meetings, I don't know where these people come from. They say things like, I've never been to a meeting where I didn't leave feeling better. I love AA. I know these meetings are so wonderful. I came here tonight, I was all fragmented, and now I feel so good. And these meetings are just so good. I love meetings, and they're so helpful. This is my first meeting in a year. But I'm going to try to get to one once a month. You say, oh, Sparky. You know, you got a few lights out on your marquee. You know, the bulb spell out, you know. And the deal is that people just the deal. They want to make up another deal. They want to run over here and try that, you know, sex without partners or something, yeah. Anything but do what's right in front of me. And the reason that people don't want to do that is because when you start to do it, you cannot stay the person you are. And people have a real concern about what will become of me. And what will become of you is you'll become the person you always were. And you'll get to see it for the first time. And you'll get to know a lot about love in Alcoholics Anonymous. And love is the process whereby we lead you gently back to yourself. and you get to see yourself for the first time. It's like the five loaves and the two fishes. You know, it multiplies when you give it away. It's the most powerful force in the world. There's no force that even can be compared to it. And the nice part about it is you cannot lose what you do not have. You know, you heard stories this week. If something is meant to be, you may have to do it two or three times, but it's meant to be. You know? That was a general statement. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. You know? But that's the deal here. And you got to use the words we use. You know, we are, as the book says, we're selfish and self-centered. That's the root of our problem. You know, we're driven by 100 forms of basically delusion. You know, we're self-centered people. And you have to get that out of the way. And I don't know when it happened, but about 10 years ago, there's a word that started to sneak into AA. And now you hear it, you know, you hear it all the time. And I'm not upset with the word. It really doesn't bother me, except it's not the word. And the word is denial. 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 You go to a dictionary and look up the word denial. Then go to a dictionary and look up the word that we use, delusion. The word denial says, someone who knows the truth but has difficulty expressing it. You look up the word delusion, it says psychotic thought. Where the individual involved has absolutely no comprehension of reality. That's our word, delusion, you know? You know, people say, well, I'm in denial. In our group, that's spiritual growth. You know, like, you know, you went from being totally wacko to having a, you know, now you're just a liar, you know. But at least you know what you're lying about, you know. And the bottom line is after you hear a while, life gets very, very simple. If you allow it to be very, very simple. And it doesn't have to be worked out. It just has to be lived. And in living, it takes care of itself. And, you know, I hear people sometimes who say, well, you know, I got to be here so long before this happens. That's not true. You can make the decision to be in the moment anytime you want. You don't have to wait for some future date. And if you look at the word now and spell it backwards, it's one, W-O-N. As soon as you learn to live in the now, you've won. And you get to have some fun in life. And you get to understand that there's absolutely, you know, there's a guarantee in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that guarantee is a powerful guarantee, and we put it right at the beginning of chapter 5, and it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. I'll tell you, folks, I've been here 30 years. I've never seen anyone fail. The program has never failed. I've seen a lot of individuals who did drive-bys, walk-bys, cameo appearances, you know, did 30 programs in one, you know, decided, well, I can't go to this meeting tonight because I'm over here and I got to deal with this because that's that and this is this and I don't want to get this with that or that with this. And so they're constantly trying to make something out of nothing. The secret here is to make nothing out of something. You know, it's not about doing anything. It's about being everything. And life gets really easy. After a while, you know, it's like going to the racetrack. The racetrack in our area opened yesterday. A buddy of mine called me and he said, sorry you're not here to go opening day. And I told him, I said, you know, what's the first race? He said, it's a mile race. And I said, you know, Mike, if one of those horses would choose not to leave the gate, that horse would win the race. He said, what do you mean? I said, in a mile race, they go completely around and come back where they start. The one horse just hung out there. He'd see them coming and go. Why get beat to death and run your butt off when you're already where you're starting from? You know? Just hang out at the finish line and kind of slip in right when the moment comes. You know, you cannot be anything you are not. It's just that simple. You know, if you wake up in the morning and you're a rose and you decide at 10 o'clock you want to be a daffodil, It's a long day. You know, it's a long, long, long day. You know, you can go and get whatever outside help you think you need, but it's a long day. You know, and that's why people drink, because they are a rose and they want to be a daffodil. You know, and once you find out who you are and you just accept that, you'll find out that almost everything else that bothers you goes away. How can you look around at the environment we're in and have any question about trusting life? Look back at your own life. Everything you did to end up sitting in one of these seats, and your reward or punishment is sitting in one of these seats. Wow, I'm overpowered. This is heavy. I had lunch, or I should say dinner the other night with a friend of mine, and that friend had just gotten out of jail. Attica, 25 years in Attica. He served every day. He had no probation, no parole. He was Peck's bad boy. And he and I grew up together, and he came to visit me. And last Friday night at this time, he and I were sitting in a restaurant. And I took him to a restaurant where they had a menu that was like 8 pages, because I thought, this way he can get whatever he wants. And he sat there. And the more he looked at the menu, the more he began to get very fearful. And I saw the perspiration come on his face, and he was just sitting there, shaken with that menu. And the waitress came over, and she said, "Does your friend need more time?" I said, "Ma'am, there's a lot of things he needs, but more time, you know, is not one of them. Just give us a break here for a second." So I went around in a restaurant, macho me. And I put my arms around him. And I said, "You know what? There's a lot of times I don't know what I want. Just sit there, take your time. When you're ready, make the move. And don't have to say shit to me. Just tap your spoon or something." And I came back and sat down. I saw a couple of people check us out. But you know what? I'm not accountable to those folks. I'm accountable to the person who needs the help. And a lot of times in life, people have been there for me and done things that were just so overwhelming. I mentioned before that my son died on a Tuesday, the day after Labor Day, several years back. And we had him cremated. And his mom said, "You know," she said, "I would just feel better if there's a service." So she told me that Wednesday night. And I said, "Okay." And there was a little church that we knew. And we said, "We'll go to that church and have it there." And we decided we'd do it Friday morning. And we figured there'd be, you know, a family. That would be it, and a couple of people who knew about it. And I showed up at that church on Friday and went in. And I was so preoccupied with a lot of other things that were going on, I didn't take note of what was going on around me. But when I got up to leave that church, there were over 500 people in that church. And they were all members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were people who were there last minute, you know, work day. And there were people who just said, "We're here. If you need us, we're here." And that's the whole deal of this program. It's whenever anyone reaches out, we want the hand of AA to be there. And it doesn't matter which one of us carries the ball, as long as one of us goes. And hopefully we all have the same message. And that message is, I've been where you're at. I know the shit you're in. And I know exactly what we can do about it. We can take you to a place where they'll give you a set of steps, and those steps will evict you from your hiding place, and they'll allow you to see the truth of your life. And you only have to pay a buck a meeting. It's real cheap. And if you don't have the buck, don't worry about it. If you don't have the book, we'll give it to you. This is a deal that's meant to be easy. And each person that gets picked up that way and gets brought to a meeting is started on the spiritual life is not a theory. I want to thank you guys for letting me come here. It's been a great week for me. It's been a series of great nows. And you know, like my son was in 93, I'm as good to go tonight as I've ever been in my life. And I have no hesitation about whatever comes next, because I trust what has already happened. And life owes me nothing. If I got my ticket punched, I've had the ride. And the whole point of being here, and I hopefully you hear this loud and clear, is our job is to be there for one another And we got to take real good care of one another because we're only on loan. God bless you.